dedicate the Shir, Le'ilu Nishmas Moshe Lei Ben Yaakov David and Daniel Bas Eliyada. I also want to add to that my brother's yard site is tonight, so we'll add that also. Rafael Peretz David Ben Pesach. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. Fifth Mishnah in the first parak. We'll learn the Mishnah first, and then we'll go back over it and take it apart. Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. The second of this pair was Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. If you look in the Mishnayos, the word Yerushalayim is spelled without a yud, the second yud, Yerushalayim. And that's the way that it's spelled most of the time in Tanakh, on a ksuba, or any other document. That's the way it's supposed to be spelled, without a yud, without a second yud. I'll explain to you in 1 second why. The Gemara says that Yerushalayim got its name as a combination from two great people. Malki Tzedek was Melech Shalem. He was the king of Yerushalayim. He was the son of Noach, Shem ben Noach. His name was Malki Tzedek. And he called Yerushalayim, he called that city Shalem. Complete. Perfect. Avram Avinu called the Har HaMoriah, basically that is the focal point of Yerushalayim, Hashem Yireh, or Hashem Yeroeh. So the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I have a problem. If I call it Shalem, I'm going to slight Avram Avinu. If I call it Yireh, I'm going to slight Shem. So I'll combine the two names and call it together Yerushalayim. There's two problems. One is if he wanted to combine the two names, he should have called it Yireh Shalem. Why Yerushalayim? So the could be that the reason it's Yeru and not Yireh or Yeroeh, because Avraham Avinu called it two things. Har Hashem Yireh, where God will see, and Har Hashem Yeroeh. They called the place Yireh, the Har Hashem Yeroeh, which echoes what it says later on in the Torah. Three times a year we come to see Kibiyachol, the Rabbanu Shalom, and to be seen. Shalosh Pomim Bashana Yeroeh Kol Zechurcha. We come to be scrutinized by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we scrutinize him. We come face to face with him. So it's both Yireh and Yeroeh. In order not to keep it to any one of those pronunciations, the Rabbanu Shalom took the Aleph and the Hay and combined them to a Vav. And now it's not either pronunciation, it's both of them together. Yiru. But why Shalayim? It should have been Shalem. In addition, since Malki Tzedek preceded Avram Avinu, it should have been Shalem Yireh. Malki Tzedek's name should have come first, and then Avram. Not Yerushalayim, but Shalem Yireh, or Shalem Yeru. Why Yerushalayim? And explained in the past, I'm not going to go into great detail now, that Malki Tzedek looked at it from a Goyish standpoint. He was a Ben Noach, wasn't a Jew. And he saw the perfection of Yerushalayim, that it is a place that has a perfect potential. All of the Yerushalayim contains everything that's in the world is in Yerushalayim. Okay, the Sefer Chachayim, which is the Sefer from the brother of the Maharal Prag, says that if you look, Yerushalayim has many of the climates of the world in it, and if you look, all the people of the world somehow gravitate here. Go to the coastal, you'll see the whole world. Right? Every kind of ethnic person ends up there almost every day. He says that Yerushalayim is the nerve center of the world. Everything, all the hashpah of the world, it's like the center is here and it branches off with all of the cables that go to all the various different parts of the world, but they converge in Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim has the potential perfection of everything. So he called it Shalem, perfect. But that is how a non-Jew looks at things. That's why the non-Jewish world, before the Torah was given, worshipped HaKadosh Baruch Hu with matzevos. A matzeva is one stone that you take as it is and you make a sacrifice on it. We don't serve the Rebbeinu Shel matzevos. In fact, it's usher to make matzevos for worship. We serve the Rebbeinu Shel with a mizbeach. A mizbeach is something you have to build. You have to take the stones that God gave, but you have to build it. You have to do something with it. The Jewish way is to take the potential, but to realize it, to actualize it, to not leave it as potential, not to just admire the potential of nature, but to build on that. That's why a non-Jew remains the way that he is born. And a Jew has to go through Bris Milah to perfect himself. We perfect nature. We build onto nature. The only place that we have matzevos are in the Beis HaKvaros, in the cemetery. When a person reaches whatever potential he had, that's the matzeva. But in service of Hashem, when you're alive, you don't serve God with a matzeva, you serve Him with a mizbeach. You build. So Avraham Avinu also saw the shleimus of Yerushalayim, the potential perfection, but he realized that we have a responsibility to perfect that, to build on it. So the Yireh, we have to come face to face with God, both with Yirah Shamayim, it's called Hara Moriah, Shemisham Yotze Yireh La'olam, fear of God, respect of God, and also Shemisham Yotzei Horah, Torah. The edicts of the Torah come from Har HaMoriah. So we have to combine the Yiras Hashem and the laws of the Torah to take nature and perfect it and build on it and bring out its perfection. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam said, Yerushalayim, it belongs to the Jews. And therefore, Avram's name is the Iker. The Yira comes first. First you have to have the fear of God. First you have to have the laws of the Torah. First you have to come and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu and let Him see you. And then you can bring out the Sholem, the Shleimus. And then it's not just one Shleimus. It's not just the Shleimus that Shane saw, that it has the perfection of this world. But Yerushalayim, there's two Yerushalayims. There's Yerushalayim Shalmata, the earthly Yerushalayim, and then there's the heavenly Yerushalayim Shalmala, which is directly above. Whatever that means, it doesn't mean space, but it means it is directly related, synchronized with this Yerushalayim here. And God says, until I can go into the Beis HaMikdash, Lamata, when it'll be rebuilt, I'm not going to enter the Yerushalayim above. And therefore, most of the time, Yerushalayim has been destroyed, and the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed for the last 2,000 years. It's been more times not there than there. So Yerushalayim is most of the time in Tanakh written without a Yud to signify that it's not a double Yerushalayim, it's only a single Yerushalayim, the one above. The one below is not here. But the one below will be here too, then the Yud will come back and Yerushalayim will be complete. It also signifies that God will not enter the Yerushalayim above, that Yud, the heavenly Yerushalayim, until the earthly Yerushalayim is rebuilt. So that's why it's called Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim, even though it's pronounced Yerushalayim, but it's written as if it would be Yerushalayim. Okay. So what did he say? Now we know who he was. Now let's see what he said. Yehi beischa pasuach l'ravacha. Thank you. I don't know if it's going to help, but I'll try. Baruch ato Adonai Eloheinu melech olam shakol mi'ev v'varach. Okay, Yehi beischa pasuach l'ravacha. We'll see the simple translation. We'll see there are other possible translations of what it says here. Simple meaning is, let your house be opened wide. V'yu aniyim b'nei beisecha, and the poor should be members of your household. They should feel comfortable in your house as if they are members of the household. So your house is opened wide, poor people can come in, and they can feel comfortable. V'altar v'sicha ma'isha, but don't spend too much time speaking with the woman. Be'ishta amru, means even your own wife. We'll see in 1 second what that means. Kal v'chomer be'ishas chaveiro, surely not with somebody else's wife. Mikan amru chachamim, from here the rabbis said, kol amar v'sicha ma'isha, whoever excessively speaks, sicha, that kind of conversation with a woman, gorim ro li'atzmo, he causes bad to himself, ubotel midivrei Torah, and he wastes his time from learning Torah, v'sofo yoresh gehenem, and at the end he's going to inherit gehenem for the sins that he's going to collect by spending too much time speaking idle talk with a woman, even his own wife. Okay, that is the mission. As we said that we're going to do, and as we've done in the first four Mishnayos, we're going to first explain this mission according to the Abarbanel, and then we will go into other commentaries. Okay. The Abarbanel says the following. He says that all of this refers back to the Mishnah of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik said the world exists on three things: Torah, Avoda, and Gemilus Chasodim. So each of the Mishnayos following that dealt with one of these areas. And the last one was with Torah, that your house should be a meeting place of the Chachamim. This Mishnah deals with Gemilus Chasodim, that your house should be a place that's open to the poor, where you'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Gemilus Chasodim. And and that's what this Mishnah basically is, a continuation of what came before. He says the following: your house should be open wide. He said that doesn't mean your house should be hefker, that just anybody can come in and out, even though there were great gedolim that they described their homes like that. That people, you know, move in, sleep here, sleep there. They say that the Briskarov's home was like that. That walked in, his family, and found people who just took up residence in the house. And they say that Chaim Kanievsky, his wife, was like that. Somebody came to her, poured out her heart, she has no place to live. She said, okay, you'll move in over here. And they put her in the hall somewhere because they didn't have too many rooms themselves. And she just became a tenant by them for free. But that's the Abarbanel says that is not the way that most people can live. You can't make your house hefker, where it's just open to anybody. There has to be some kind of order. You have to be the balabos over the house, right? What it means is that your house should be open to help people who need help. You should decide how to do that, when to do that, if to do that, so your house isn't open that anybody can just come in whenever they want. But it should be opened to the needs of other people. That's what it means. And that means that you are opened to loan things to people that need them, things that you have that you can let people borrow. Also, it means that your house is open to make loans to people of money if they need, and you ascertain that that you can get your money back. If not, if they deserve tzedakah, then give them tzedakah instead of giving them a loan that you know you're not going to get back. And it should be open for haknosas orchim, to receive guests, and to feed people who need food. So that's what it means. Doesn't mean it should be open literally, and anybody can come in and go out whenever they want. But it means you should be open to the needs of other people and be able to provide them accordingly. Okay. And the people who come to your home and receive this aid shouldn't feel embarrassed. You should make them feel comfortable. You should make them feel as if they are members of your household, that when they're in your house, they don't feel out of place. They feel that you welcome them as equals. And that's part of the aid that you give people, not to make them feel uncomfortable, not to make them feel like they are nebuchs, but to make them feel like they're part of the household. And they're receiving what other people in the household receive also. The Rambam says a different shot in the Yu Aniyim B'nei Beisecha. He says like this. A person can hire non-Jews to be the butlers in his house or to take care of other things that are necessary around the house, but you shouldn't do that. In place of hiring non-Jews to take care of the menial services that you need in your house, the Yu Aniyim B'nei Beisecha, the people you bring into your home and hire them to take care of the various things that the home needs, should be poor Jews. You should take in a Jew and favor him over hiring a goy, hire a Jew. The same thing goes, and that way you can give tzedakah in a very respectable way by giving somebody a chance to earn some money. And this goes in everything. You always favor a Jew. If you have something to buy it from a Jew rather than buy it from a goy. On the other hand, there are conditions for that. If the Jew wants a very much higher price, or the Jew is not as accessible as the goy, it's easier for you to buy it from the goy than to buy it from the Jew, then if it's a considerable amount of extra money that you're going to have to pay, or a considerable amount of bother that you're going to have, then you can buy it from the goy. But if not, then you have to favor a Jew over a goy when it comes to buying something, when it comes to selling something, when it comes to giving tzedakah. Jews should be favored to give you money to tzedakah to Jews before you give it to goy. We do give tzedakah to goy too. And you can buy and sell things from goy. But in the priority is to a Jew. This issue, back in the beginning of the state, in pre-State of Israel years, there was a movement of Avodas Ivri, of only hiring Jews. Not hiring goyim b'chlal, only hiring Jews, and not because of religious reasons, but because of nationalistic reasons. And it became even a point of contention where people came to fights and even bloodshed because of it. Since it wasn't based on halacha, but based on other considerations, considerations of nationalism, many times it was abused and distorted. But again, halakhically also, there is an idea of favoring and giving priority to hiring a Jew over a goy. But if there are other considerations, for instance, the Jew can't do the job as well as the goy. So you hire a Jew and he'll mess up your house because he doesn't know what he's doing. And the goy is an expert in what he's doing. Or sometimes giving employment to goyim helps to create the atmosphere where there's shalom in the world. Because if the goyim don't have jobs and they don't have what means of earning a living, then they have plenty of time on their hands to do other things. And that's not good over here. Better Arabs should be working and supporting their families than having the time to go and do other things that Arabs do in their spare time. So, I just don't want to get arrested or in any case. So, right. So there are a lot of different considerations that if you look at it from a Torah standpoint, those considerations have to be taken into account. If you look at it from merely a nationalistic standpoint, not Torah, then you can take things to an extreme and distort them and cause more harm than good with ideas that essentially are good ideas, but again, Talmud Torah keneged kula. In fact, next week's Sedra says that the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, right, came and fought against Yaakov Avinu. So they ask, why did he fight against Avram and Yitzchak? They also represented things that the Satan was not happy with, like Chesed, Avoda, right? Why Dafka Yaakov Avinu did the Satan fight? Some say the reason is because Chesed, if you don't have a Torah to guide you, Chesed can become something that is totally distorted. And the name of Chesed, you can do terrible, terrible evil in this world. Okay, there are many organizations that supposedly defend human rights and do Chesed, right? And they are the scourge of this society here. They're destroying this country in the name of Chesed and being being fair or whatever. They are mamash the opposite. It's a mask. So Chesed can lead to other things too. Chesed can lead to immorality, being too much of a open Baal Chesed, wanting to be open to everybody. So, and Avoda, service of God, can be Avoda Zorah. It can be strange service. It can be idolatry, right? Service, and you think you're doing it to God. Right? You can do all kinds of things in the name of service to God and create all new kinds of worship. Whereas I once heard a reform rabbi, female rabbi, I guess you'd call her a rabbit, she's not a rabbanit, because that's a rabbi's wife. So I guess rabbit would be a good name. I heard once on the radio, she described what they were doing in Reform Judaism. They were creating new traditions. Now that is an oxymoron. A tradition is something that has some kind of basis to it in the past, and you can't create new traditions. So in any case, when you create new traditions, you create things that sometimes are a total distortion of what the Rabbanu Shlom wants. It's not, and you do things that are totally prohibited in the name of serving God. So there are people that created cults where serving God is taking drugs and becoming very spiritual in a very negative way, or women going into the coastal of Amaravi on Rosh Chodesh and streaking out their kishkes with Kol Isha and doing something that the Torah says is not proper, but they're doing it to serve God. There's a lot of strange fires that can be lit in service of God and be called avoda, but it's avoda zara. So what keeps all of that in tow, in check? Torah. If you have the Torah, then the chesed is chesed and the avoda is avoda. So the Satan said, I can live with chesed because it could be distorted and it could serve my purposes. I could live with avoda. It also can be distorted and serve my purposes, but I can't live with Torah. So he came and fought against Yaakov Avinu, who represented Torah. It's my grandson. What brings you here?
Okay.
He's a photographer.
The proud light.
I didn't think my shear brought him here.
Okay. No, why not?
I also say why not, but that's okay.
The
okay. In any case, the Tazara Shishiva, Dr. Chaim Mordechai Katz, says that is an alternate meaning of what we say every morning. We list the whole thing of Chesed and Avoda, Eilu Dvarim, She Oven Ochel Peiro Seim Ba'olam Hazeh, Ba'Keren Kayemes L'Mava. And we end the Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. So the simple meaning is Talmud Torah is equal to all of those other things. But he said it means something different too. Talmud Torah Keneged Kula means in order to assess whether you're really honoring your parents properly, whether you're really doing chesed, whether you're really doing any of these things properly, you need to put it opposite the Torah and look at it through the Torah's lenses. Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. You have to assess them all opposite the Torah. Because if you don't assess them according to the Torah, you may be doing something that is totally wrong. For instance, Kibbut Av Ve'Em. Person wants to honor his parents. So his parents tell him to be Mechal Shabbos. And he dutifully listens to them, thinking that he's fulfilling a mitzvah. When if you learn Torah, you know that parents have a limitation on what they can tell their children to do and what a child has to listen to. One of the limitations is they can't tell you to do something against the Torah, because both they and you are responsible to listen to God. So they have no authority to tell you to go against what God said. So you may think that you're a great child listening to your parents and going against the Torah, when in fact there's no mitzvah at all and you're doing something wrong. So in order to know if you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Kibbut Av Ve'Em or not, you have to take the Torah opposite it and assess it according to the Torah. So therefore, it's important to know if you're doing something right or wrong and assess it by the Torah. How do we get onto this? Because we spoke about hiring Jews, and we said that there was an idea of doing that, but not from a Torah standpoint, from a nationalistic standpoint, and then it becomes distorted. Therefore, things have to be put into perspective by putting them into the perspective of Torah. Okay. And the Abarbanel brings down another explanation of the Yuanim B'nei Deksecha. So far, he said two, one in his own name and one in the Rambam's name. In his own name, he said the Yuanim B'nei Deksecha means that the people, the poor people who come to benefit from the welfare that you will distribute in your home will feel comfortable. They won't feel as if they're second-class citizens, as they're nevachs. The second shot was the Rambam, that if you have to hire people to take care of the needs of your home, hire poor Jews and in that way give them a living rather than hiring non-Jews. And the third shot he says is the following. He says it's not talking about the aniyim who come into your home, but the people of your household should be aniyim, not poor, but anovim. They should be humble. That when they deal with the poor people that come in your home, they should deal with them in a humble way and not deal with them in a way where they look at these people in a condescending way and make them feel uncomfortable. Train the people of your home that if you open your home to the poor, they treat them with respect. They are aniyim, meaning they are humble in how they treat. They don't lord over the people who come into the home. There are many places, or just in Los Angeles, there's one or two gvirim like this, and then there's, what's it called, in Toronto, I know people like that, and probably a lot of places in the world. Gvirim that open their home for a certain time, right, one day a week or whatever, you know that you can go there, and there's lines outside the house, and one after another comes in, and this guy sits with his checkbook, and it's, again, Baruch Hashem, I didn't have to stand on the line there. I came to help somebody who was collecting for an organization, and they told us to come a few minutes before they open the doors so we can come in and go out and not have to stand in line with everybody else. But it hurt to see all these people. I mean, you could see people who are handicapped and people that were who came for medical reasons and people who came, all the spectrum of society, of people in need. And these people could make these people feel like, you know, what could their second class city, or it could make them feel comfortable. So the Mishnah says, train the people in your home to treat, if you're going to open your home to people, let them feel respected, respectable. Not as if they are nebuchs or whatever, and train the people in your home to do that, and you make the atmosphere in your home conducive to that. Okay, that is the... okay, now, that is the first part of the Mishnah, according to the Abarbanel. The last part of the Mishnah is not to speak too excessively to women. Now, what in the world does that have to do with this mission? And what does it mean? Okay. So he says like this, if you make your home, you open your home to needy people, inevitably they're going to be women that come also. They also have needs. And here you, and the danger is that if you converse too freely with the women that come into your home, it may lead to immorality, and if not immorality, to things that are improper, especially where the women are need you to take care of their needs. People have been known to take advantage of women who are in a vulnerable position and come to them for help, and therefore don't lend the situation lead to that. Okay, there's a better word to that, but it's okay. To lead to that. Okay, and it says, even your own wife tell you not to speak to strange women. Even a person's own wife, he shouldn't speak to excessively sicha. Next week we'll go into this in great detail. It doesn't mean the person shouldn't speak to his wife. Rabbi Kiva Eger wrote in a tshuva that he used to spend hours past midnight discussing very important issues with his wife, issues of the home, issues of Yerushalayim. That's not what he's talking about. It's talking about idling away useless talk, which wastes a person's time, and we'll see, even with his own wife, can lead to things that are prohibited. We'll discuss next week what that includes, surely with other people's wives, or with somebody that's not your wife. So the reason it's in this Mishnah is because opening your home wide to people in need, inevitably women are going to be coming, and you have to know how to deal properly with women that come for your help. Right? And the opposite is also true. Women have to be careful not to spend too much time talking to other people's husbands in the way that next week we will discuss is improper. There's a proper way, there's an improper way, and we will go into probably spend the next year discussing this idea. Thank you.